from the world.
And I think we all get caught up in it. You know, there's an old saying, if it weren't for bad news, there would be no news. Sometimes it seems like that's true. Although when we really think about it, we know, no, that's not true. That's not true. There is good news. But this world focuses our attention on everything bad that is going on. So I want to talk about anticipating your future and my future, hopefully. Picture yourself in God's kingdom 10 or 15 years after Christ has returned, and you are anticipating a visit from close family who are still physical, flesh and blood, human beings who did not make it into the first resurrection but are still alive in this world. And you, being a spirit being at that time, are anticipating their visit down to Jerusalem. And you are preparing to show them the sights, show them the temple of God, show them what has been done to beautify the area, the beginning of reaching out to the surrounding areas, to the deserts, and reforesting those areas, rebuilding them, if you will. There will be, at that time, you know, streams, what is now just desert. So, from that vantage point, then, let's look back to see what has already been accomplished by that time, 10 or 15 years after Christ returns. And I would like, first of all, for you to turn to Ezekiel 43, because Ezekiel was given a vision, and it describes in detail the temple and the area in Jerusalem where the temple will be built after Jesus Christ returns, or some people think it is to be built before Jesus Christ returns. I tend to think it'll be afterwards, but you know, that's not doctrine. I don't know exactly. There will be some kind of temple in existence when Christ returns, but it doesn't have to be this elaborate temple that Ezekiel describes. So we'll start reading in verse 1. Afterward, he brought me to the gate, even the gate that looks toward the east, and behold, the glory of God of Israel came from the way of the east, and his voice was like a noise of many waters. We've seen that phrase elsewhere in the Bible. And the earth shined with his glory. Jesus Christ will enter the temple, and not only Jesus Christ. I understand the prince, which is David, the prince over all Israel, will also use that same gate in the east. It will not be used by the general public in the temple. It will be reserved for Jesus Christ and King David. Skip down to verse 4, save a little time here. And the glory of the Lord came into the house by the way of the gate, whose prospect is toward the east. So the Spirit took me up and brought me into the inner court. This is inside the temple, the inner court. There is also an outer court in the temple that will be built, a huge area with a high wall around it, and cubicles on the outside. Well, it'll be the inside of the outer wall, put it that way. There will be cubicles for the priests to store their tools, because they will be sacrificing during that time, just like they did back in the Old Testament days. But anyway, he brought me into the inner court, and behold, the glory of the Lord filled the house. And I heard him speaking unto me out of the house, and the man stood by me, and he said unto me, Son of man, the place of my throne and the place of the soles of my feet, where I will dwell in the midst of the children of Israel forever, and my holy name shall the house of Israel no more defile, neither they nor their kings by their whoredoms, nor by carcasses of their kings in their high places. But it's a promise. Jerusalem and that area will no more be defiled. The people who are spirit, of course, will have made their choice. They will have learned to live by every word of God. And the human, you know, flesh and blood human beings who come into the area or who live in the area will be people who will be obeying God completely. There will be peace, finally, at least in that particular area. Now, from there, we know it will spread out around the world, but it'll start in Jerusalem. In Ezekiel 46, verse 1, thus say the Lord God, the gate of the inner court that looks toward the east shall be shut 6 working days, but on the Sabbath it shall be opened. You know, it won't be open to the general public anyway. So if it's a work day, it's going to be closed. And in the day of the new moon, it shall be opened. And verse 2, and the prince shall enter by the way of the porch of that gate without, and shall stand by the post of the gate. And the priest shall prepare his burnt offering and his peace offerings, and he shall worship at the threshold of the gate. Then he shall go forth, but the gate shall not be shut until the evening. That's on the Sabbath days, the holy days, the new moons. This prince, we know that's not, in this case, it's not talking about Jesus Christ, because this prince will be sacrificing to Jesus Christ. Verse 3, likewise the people of the land shall worship at the door of this gate before the Lord in the Sabbaths and in the new moons. That's why the door will remain open for the rest of the day on the Sabbaths, because the people, the physical people, will also do their worship from that door. Verse 8, when the prince shall enter, he shall go in by the way of the porch of that gate, and he shall go forth by the way thereof. But when the people of the land shall come before the Lord in the solemn feast, he that enters in by the way of the northern gate to worship shall go out by the way of the south gate. That's a kind of an unusual situation here. King David will use the east gate, going and coming, same gate, but the other people, if they enter by the southern gate, they have to exit by the northern gate. And going on, and he that enters by the way of the south gate shall go forth by the way of the north gate. So no matter which gate they enter in, north or south, they have to exit on the opposite side of the building. I thought that was kind of strange. I don't know exactly why that is, but it's what Ezekiel saw, what he was told. Verse 12. Now when the prince shall prepare a voluntary burnt offering or peace offerings, voluntary unto the Lord, one shall then open him the gate that looks toward the east, and he shall prepare his burnt offering and his peace offerings as he did on the Sabbath day. So there's an exception here. If King David wants to make a special offering, the gate will be open for him. You know, it's his gate, more or less. His and Jesus Christ. They will be the ones that enter at that gate. As he did on the Sabbath day, then he shall go forth, and after his going forth, one shall shut the gate. So, this is the temple, basically, that will be built when Christ returns, or at least it'll be there. Now, let's go to Isaiah. Isaiah has a lot to say about that time in the future when Jesus Christ will return and reign on earth. Isaiah 49. And we'll start in verse 22. Thus saith the Lord God, Behold, I will lift my hand to the Gentiles and set up my standard to the people, and they shall bring your sons in their arms, and your daughters shall be carried upon their shoulders. Here is a promise. If we have sons and daughters, you know, imagine this, when Jesus Christ returns, you know what's going to happen? We all know what's going to happen to us if we're faithful to the end. We're going to be changed of spirit beings. We're going to meet Jesus Christ in the air. We're going to descend with him to Jerusalem. Some of us may have children, even small children. They're not going to be changed of spirit beings. Where are they going to be? Here is a promise that the Gentiles, God will put it in the heart of the Gentiles to bring the children to Jerusalem, to their parents, to their spirit being parents. Now, God could have done it a more rapid way or many different ways or any way that he chose. But here, he's going to put it into the heart of the Gentiles to bring those children to their parents. So you have a promise for your children. Verse 23. This one I really love because it's almost beyond our comprehension, the way things work in this world. And kings shall be your nursing fathers, and their queens your nursing mothers. They shall bow down to you with their face toward the earth and lick up the dust of your feet, and you shall know that I am the Lord, for they shall not be ashamed who wait on me. Imagine that. You know, imagine going before, say, the president or the greatest dignitary that you can think of in this world, and you know how you might be somewhat nervous, and you'd be prepared. Say if you went before the Queen of England, you would want to know the protocol. You would want to know how to act. Am I supposed to bow, curtsy if you're a lady, or what am I supposed to do? Here, kings from the Gentile nations will be coming to Jerusalem, and they're going to be coming, and they're going to be bowing at your feet if you endure to the end. That is a promise. God will put it in their heart. They are going to look around, and, you know, this 10 or 15 years after Christ has been on earth, they're going to see how perfectly the government in that area works and how beautiful the area is and how well the people get along. And what peace and joy, as was brought out in the sermonette, is going to be there in Jerusalem, that the kings are going to come saying, I want to learn from you. I want to learn how this was brought about. And you will be there to teach them. And they will say to you, perhaps, you know, to paraphrase, I will tend your garden. I will tend your crop. I will watch your kids. I will babysit. I will do what you want me to do. Just teach me your way. Teach me. You know, we sing the song, Teach Me Thy Ways, O Lord. Here, kings of the earth are going to be coming to you and ask you, Teach me this way that you have learned. Verse 24. Shall the prey be taken from the mighty, or the lawful captive delivered? But thus saith the Lord, even the captives of the mighty shall be taken away. That is, people who have captured, who dominate, even the mighty in the world, they shall be taken away. And the prey of the terrible shall be delivered. In other words, the situation is going to be reversed. The captives are going to be taken away, those who do the capturing, the dominating, if you will. But the people that they dominate are going to be delivered. For I will contend with him that contendeth with you. Here, God is saying, I will fight your battles. You won't have anything to worry about. If they come against you, they're coming against me, and they will not win. They will not win. And another promise, or a repeat of the promise that we just saw. And I will save your children. I know people who have young children, they're concerned about that. They're concerned about the children. What happens? What happens to my children if I am changed to spirit? If I meet Jesus Christ in the air and I descend to Jerusalem with him and will forever be with him. So we have all kinds of promises. God will take care of your children. There will be a tremendous project started in Jerusalem just to beautify the place. And that may seem a little bit unusual at first because there will be so much to be done. We know the earth basically will be just devastated. But God will pay attention to beautifying the area of the temple and God's government. And then it will spread out from there, from year to year, you know, throughout the whole earth. But he gives particular attention to making the place beautiful. And when you think that through, you begin to realize, well, yes, you know, when you're in an area that is beautiful, you feel better. Your spirits are lifted. You're happier. You're more willing to rejoice, as we heard in the sermonette. So it is important that the beauty be brought to the government of God to begin with, and then eventually around the world. In Psalm 49:4, I'll just read one verse here. It says, "For the Lord taketh pleasure in his people. He will beautify the meek with salvation." So a part of that beautification that's going to be going on is going to be in the people. In the, you know, the attitude, the mindset of the people. It's going to be beautiful to behold. To see how people relate to one another and love one another and care about one another and would take care of one another and their property just as much as they would take care of their own. Now, I want to go to Isaiah 11. Verse 1. "And there shall come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse." We know who Jesse was. Jesse is the father of David, and Jesus Christ is a descendant of David. "And a branch shall grow out of his roots. And the Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and of the fear of the Lord, and shall make him of quick understanding and the fear of the Lord, and he shall not judge after the sight of his eyes, neither reprove after the hearing of his ears, but with righteousness shall he judge the poor." Fairness. Everyone will be treated fairly. "And reprove with equity for the meek of the earth. And he shall smite the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips shall he slay the wicked. And righteousness shall be the girdle of his loins, and faithfulness the girdle of his reins. The wolf also shall dwell with the lamb." You know, this is a verse that we sing about, we read it over and over, It's that time when the nature of wild animals will be changed. You know, again, it'll be beautiful the way they react with each other, the way they react with people. The leopard shall lie down with the kid, the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. And the cow and the bear shall feed, their young ones shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. And the suckling child shall play on the hole of the asp, and the weaned child shall put his hand in the cockatrice's den. You won't worry about, you know, poisonous snakes or vicious animals. You won't have those things to worry about. You won't have to worry about if your kid, child, wanders off for a distance because you don't have to fear the animals. You don't have to fear that kind of thing. You don't have to fear people. Your neighbors or the people around would take care and look out for your children just the same as you would. Nothing to fear. Absolutely nothing. Peace, finally, on the earth. Isaiah 35. Isaiah 35, and we'll start reading in verse 1. The wilderness and the solitary place shall be glad for them. I think something similar was mentioned in the sermonette. And the desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. The whole landscape will be changed. You know, we know that the hills will be brought low. I believe I've copied a verse about that later. But the whole world eventually will be beautified. And as God's people begin to reach out into the surrounding areas, into the deserts around Jerusalem, and God will bring springs of water up out of the ground, and there will be rivers flowing what is now a desert. There will be areas where there will be forests. There will be all kinds of different trees, and they will be cared for. Not like a lot of the scrub trees that we see in this area where the logging was done years ago and the things that are left they're not that good, to be honest. It won't be like that. Trees that are useful, that are needed, that provide something for mankind will be planted in areas that used to be desert. Verse 2. It shall blossom abundantly and rejoice, even with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given unto it. And we know about the cedars of Lebanon. When Solomon was building the temple and building his own house, they brought cedar trees down from Lebanon to be used in God's house, in the temple, and also in Solomon's own home. The excellency of Carmel and Sharon, they shall see the glory of the Lord and the excellency of our God. Strengthen you the weak hands and confirm the feeble knees. Say to them that are of a faint heart, be strong. Fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance, even God with recompense. He will come and save you. You know, this is looking back, you know. This will have already happened in this period, 10 or 15 years down the road. It will be a thing of the past. If we read that, we'll say, oh, yeah, that happened. That happened way back there. Verse 5. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened. The ears of the deaf shall be stopped. I'll be able to hear. Then shall the lame man leap like a hart. The tongue of the dumb shall sing. You know, that's another thing. I'd love to be able to sing, but I embarrass myself when I try. But that will be taken care of. You know, things like that. God will take care of it. For in the wilderness shall waters break out, and streams in the desert. The parched ground shall become a pool, the thirsty land springs of water. In the habitation of dragons, where each lay shall be grass with reeds and rushes. A highway shall be there, and a way, and it shall be called the way of holiness. The unclean shall not pass over it. The unclean will not be allowed to use that highway to come into Jerusalem. But it shall be for those, the wayfaring man, though fools shall not err therein. You know, even the people who have not yet come to perfection, God will see that they do no evil if they're on that highway. It will not be allowed. No lion shall be there, nor any ravenous beast shall go up thereon. It shall not be found there, but the redeemed shall walk there. And the ransomed of the Lord shall return and come to Zion with songs and everlasting joy upon their heads. They shall obtain joy and gladness and sorrow, and sighing shall flee away. We do a lot of sighing in this day and age, or at least I do. You know, you see what's going on, and I've known for some 50 years that it was going to come, and it's going to get worse, but it is still hard to deal with. Again, I mentioned the reforestation. I want to go to Isaiah 41 now, and we'll read some more about that. Isaiah 41. Verse 10. Fear you not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. Yea, I will help you. Yea, I will uphold you with the right hand of my righteousness. Behold, all they that were incensed against you shall be ashamed and confounded. They shall be as nothing. And they that strive with you shall perish. They that strive with you shall perish. No one will be able to bring you down, to get to you, to harm you. You shall seek them and shall not find them. That is the evil. Even them that contend with you, they that war against you, shall be as nothing. Their power will be gone. It will be completely gone. They will have no power whatsoever. Verse 13, for the Lord your God will hold your right hand, saying unto you, fear not, I will help you. Fear not, you worm Jacob. You know, remember, David said, I am as a worm. I'm nothing. He was a humble man. He realized his net worth compared to God. And compared to God, he's just a worm. And here, so it is with us. All of Jacob, all of the descendants of Jacob, all of Israel. Fear not, you worm, and you men of Israel. I will help you, saith the Lord. and your Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel. Behold, I will make you a sharp threshing instrument, having teeth. You shall thresh the mountains and beat them small, shall make the hills as chaff. You shall fan them, and the wind shall carry them away, and the whirlwind shall scatter them, and you shall rejoice in the Lord, and shall glory in the Holy One of Israel. Here, you know, the rugged, steep mountains with the cliffs that are they're useless. They may be pretty, but many of those will be brought low. And God will give us a new machine to do it efficiently. It won't all be done just automatically. You know, God won't just command and it happens. There will be work to do. When the poor and needy seek water, and there is none, and their tongue faileth for thirst, I, the Lord, will hear them. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. You know, as God begins to reach out from Jerusalem and restore the earth, and there will still be people who are living in situations where, you know, there may be famine, there may be drought, but whenever it is, as God moves out to beautify the world, he will take care of those problems. Not all at once, but we'll have 1,000 years to get it done. I will open rivers in high places and fountains in the midst of the valleys. I will make the wilderness a pool of water, the dry land springs of water. I will plant in the wilderness the cedar, the sycamore tree, the myrtle, and the oil tree. And I will set in the desert the fir tree, the pine tree, and the box tree together. In the desert. It also mentioned that those particular trees will be used in Jerusalem to beautify Jerusalem. I think most of us know what the fir tree is or pine tree. Maybe not the box tree. I looked that up myself. I wasn't quite sure, but I found out that there are 70 different species of the box tree. The box tree, basically, if I had to describe it in one word, I would say it's a hedge. It's an evergreen, well, that would be two words, but it's an evergreen hedge. It is the kind of tree, if you've seen the pictures in Pasadena where they sculptured some of the little shrubs to make them look like different things. You can sculpture them to look like an animal or a spiral or, you know, the ball on top. You can cut them in all different and trim them in all different shapes. And they'll still be green. You know, the leaves will just cover everything up. You take an ordinary tree and you start cutting it back that way, and you're going to have limbs sticking out here and there and all over. But the box tree, these evergreens, you can shape them the way you want to. And you will see that kind of thing in maybe government buildings or office buildings, corporation headquarters of some of these big corporations, people who have real money. You see that kind of landscaping done. But they will be used. Another interesting thing I learned about the box tree, too, it is so dense. The wood, even though it's a small tree and it grows in different, like I say, there's 70 different species, but they're all small. But the wood is extremely tough. It's good for making cabinets, furniture, you know, any kind of furniture, things like that, that has to take a real beating. And if it happens to get banged against something, it doesn't dent easily. It's so dense that the wood sinks when you put it in the lake. You don't want to drop it in the lake because it'll sink to the bottom. It's so heavy, so dense. That's a box tree. Just a interesting thing. Let's see. Verse 20. That they may see and know and consider and understand together that the hand of the Lord has done this, and the Holy One of Israel hath created it. Your future, if you endure to the end. Isaiah 51, I want to read one verse there, verse 3. For the Lord shall comfort Zion. He will comfort all her waste places. You know, this beautification that goes on in Israel right away will spread out throughout the whole world. All the waste places. And he will make her wilderness like Eden. Like Eden. I don't know if any of us have ever seen a place as beautiful as Eden must have been. I doubt it. We've seen some pretty beautiful places, to be sure. But this is going to be extremely exceptional. Her desert like the garden of the Lord. Joy and gladness shall be found therein, thanksgiving and the voice of melody. You and I, if we endure to the end, will not only be able to enjoy this, it will be such a pleasure to help others to come to the knowledge of God's way of life, and they too will be able to enjoy the same thing, the very same thing. There will be peace throughout the earth. Isaiah 52. Verse 9. Break forth unto joy. Sing together, you waste places of Jerusalem. For the Lord hath comforted his people. He hath redeemed Jerusalem. Isaiah 58 and verse 12. Isaiah 58, verse 12. They that shall be of you, that is, our children, our sons and daughters, they that be of you shall build the old waste places. There will be employment. You know, employment that you can end every day and know that something good has been accomplished, that you can feel good about. It won't be the kind of employment that many people have to deal with, you know, with someone looking over their shoulder every minute, and they make a mistake, you know, they're in big, big trouble. It won't be like that. It'll be positive, good employment. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations. You and I. That means our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren. Many generations right on down. And you shall be called the repairer of the breach. You and I are the ones that God is going to look to begin the system that will restore this earth. The restorer of paths to dwell in. Isaiah 60, verse 13. Talking about the sanctuary, the temple, and the area around it. Isaiah 60, verse 13, the glory of Lebanon shall come unto you, the fir tree, the pine tree, and the box tree together to beautify the place of my sanctuary. And I will make the place of my feet glorious. So, looking back from 10, 15 years after Christ has already been on earth. These things will have already happened or have begun to happen in a big way. There will be a temple. It will probably be finished by that time. And you are looking forward to the big day. You know, your blood relatives, maybe your uncles, aunts, your children, your grandchildren, great-grandchildren, are coming to visit. I would imagine that just about everybody on the face of the earth, at one time during their life at least, are going to make a pilgrimage to Jerusalem. They're going to do like the Muslims do, to go down to Mecca, you know, once in a lifetime. It'll be once in a lifetime vacation. And you're looking forward to your relatives coming down there, and you're going to show them. You're going to take them to the temple and take them in and show them the outer court, the inner court, and where King David and Jesus enters into the temple and where they make their sacrifices. You're going to show them all of that. You're going to show them the surrounding area with the various trees which will be planted. It won't be, you know, like going out in the woods with all the underbrush, but it'll be beautiful, like parks. One of the, you know, the best park that you could possibly imagine, that kind of area. And then you will probably want to take them out into the countryside and show them how the new forest are growing together. It won't be like South Carolina, where it's all pine trees, and when they start burning, about all you can do is run. You know, there won't be that. It'll be a mixture of different kinds of trees. You know, we have had, I guess we still do, in this area, that kind of tree. When I was younger and we had bigger trees and less underbrush, it seemed like almost every year, the fire burned the leaves off in the fall. It didn't kill the trees. You know, the trees were big. The trees kept on growing. So the forest in those days, I'm sure, is going to be entirely different from the woods that we have today. But anyway, your relatives are coming. You're prepared, and you're going to show them. And you're going to go and you're going to show them the rivers, and you're going to show them the abundance of fish and the clear waters, you know, and the lakes and the streams that you could, if you wanted to, just lay down like I used to do when I was a kid and drink out of them. You can't do that now. But that is the kind of situation. And you're going to have the privilege of hosting your relatives, people that you yearn to teach and show them God's way. And it's going to be so exciting for them that I cannot imagine them at that time turning their back on God. They're going to be hungering for God's way because they're going to see the results of what has happened and what you are going to be a part of. So, we do have things to rejoice about.